Empire Lines uncovers the unexpected, often two-way, flows of empires through art. Interdisciplinary thinkers use individual artworks as artifacts of imperial exchange, revealing the how and why of the monolith empire.
In this episode, Dr. Nalini Iyer rereads South Indian and diasporic experiences of partition. Through Balachandra Rajan's 1958 novel, The Dark Dancer.
Don't tell me it had to happen. The police could have stopped them, and what did they do? Stood there and let them kill us. My father and mother are probably dead. Their home was in the heart of it. I am a government servant. I have a discipline to keep, and even if I hadn't, it wouldn't be in me to go out and level the score. But there are plenty to whom pulling a knife comes easier. You wouldn't guess it from all the mass marches and pacific protests, but down in many of us, there's a core of desperation waiting to explode whenever the pressure is turned off. I know, said Krishnan. I have felt some of it myself. Pratap Singh looked unbelieving. Thanks for sympathizing, but you don't know. You couldn't possibly unless it happened to you. You're a South Indian. You're 2,000 miles away from it. Your people aren't on the invasion route. Your land isn't torn by this kind of dissension. This is a passage from the novel The Dark Dancer by Balachandra Rajan. Published in 1958, it examines the partition of India and Pakistan in 1947 from the perspective of a South Indian civil servant who was educated in England and has returned to his homeland just as it was gaining independence from the British Empire. August 15, 2022 will mark the 75th anniversary of India's independence from the British, which led to the formation of two nations, India and Pakistan. Often people think this moment was wholly shaped by Mahatma Gandhi and his non-violence philosophy. But that is a skewed view of the history which ignores the violence of the decolonization movement. Instead, independence occurred as a civil war where Hindus and Sikhs on one side and Muslims on the other enacted unspeakable acts of violence and brutality to avenge their loss of land, people, and honor. In the passage we just read, Rajan highlights the heterogeneity and vastness of the newly emerging India. People living in different places and who follow different faiths and speak different languages have to find ways to identify with the idea of the Indian nation and sub-national identities thwart that. The speaker in the above-read passage insists that it is sacrifice and hardship that make for an Indian identity. To this day, cross-border rivalries, foreign policy decisions, and wars over borders and boundaries continue to be fought between both nations as they navigate what Wazira Zamindar calls the long partition. The Dark Dancer exposes the multifaceted debate on partition that includes questions about what happened and where, who was affected, who survived, and what were the consequences of the political upheaval. It is one of many partition narratives from those who survived this moment present in oral histories, poems, novels, plays, cinema, music, and television productions. Each retelling of people's experiences demonstrates the deep psychic wounds in each nation that remain unhealed even 75 years later. The Dark Dancer is unique because it is written from the point of view of a Tamil Brahmin man educated in England who witnesses the events. The narrative draws from the author's own experiences and is distinctive because it focuses on the experiences of people from South India who are often described as not having been affected by partition and its resultant displacement. In 1947, the Indian subcontinent was split into two nations, India and Pakistan, predominantly along religious lines. Partition led to the displacement of nearly 14 million people and the deaths of almost 2 million, though those numbers have been hard to count. Much of the hostilities between nations and political parties played out on the ground amongst the people who found themselves overnight a displaced minority in the land where they and their ancestors had been born. Muslims in India and Hindus and Sikhs in Pakistan feared for their lives and left their ancestral homes to travel by foot, train, and any other means of transportation they could find to one of the newly formed countries where they hoped to belong. Violence against women, mutilations, rape, abductions, and murder became the primary means by which people enacted humiliation and frustration on one another. Although the partition divided the land along religious lines, the people who followed the different major faiths affected by partition, Hinduism, Sikhism, Islam, were themselves quite heterogeneous. They spoke different languages, Punjabi, Hindi, Urdu, Bangla, Sindhi, came from different castes, and also had sectarian differences within their religious communities. These demographic differences, British political maneuvering, and the machinations of the Indian National Congress and the Muslim League all furthered division. The nation of Pakistan emerged with an east wing and a west wing, with the nation of India in the middle. But today we know the east wing as Bangladesh, born after another bloody civil war in Pakistan in 1971. The trauma of the partition was such that many families did not speak their experiences, and silences haunted families across generations. However, writers in Hindi, Urdu, Bengali, Punjabi, and English, among the many languages, began writing about their experiences with partition. Oft anthologized, Saadat Hasan Manto's translated short stories, especially Toba Takes Singh, are perhaps best known in the Anglophone world. Narratives such as Khushwant Singh's Train to Pakistan, Bhishan Sahni's Tamas, Yashpal's Jhoota Sach, Bapsi Sidhwa's Cracking India, Atiya Hussain's Sunlight on a Broken Column, and Jyotirmayi Devi's Epar Ganga, Opar Ganga are among notable partition narratives. As David Gilmartin, a historian of partition, notes, fiction offers an intense window into the everyday experiences of common people in the difficult days of 1947. A far more powerful vehicle for describing the influence of partition on the common man and woman than for describing the influence of common people on partition, writes Gilmartin. Alok Bhalla, who was a preeminent translator of partition stories, suggests that the single thing that unites these narratives is their note of utter bewilderment. Other writers did not experience partition directly, but bore witness to its horrors and shared this bewilderment. One such writer was Balachandra Rajan, the author of The Dark Dancer. Rajan was born in Burma in 1920 and came from a South Indian family. During the partition and the Second World War, he was studying in the UK as a fellow at Trinity College in Cambridge. He returned to India and joined the Indian Foreign Service as a diplomat, serving until 1961, and later became a professor of Romantic literature. Among his many accomplishments were two novels, The Dark Dancer, published in 1958, and Too Long in the West, published in 1961. The Dark Dancer tells the story of V.S. Krishnan, a Cambridge-educated Tamil Brahmin man who returns to India on the eve of its independence from Britain. Krishnan has been cut off from his family and his country for many years and is mostly a bewildered young man, unable to find a balance between his Western education and the traditional values of his Brahminical family. His parents want him to marry a good Tamil Brahmin woman whom they would find for him and whose horoscope would foretell good fortune for him in their shared life. Krishnan, in his British-educated way, finds all their values old-fashioned and superstitious, but succumbs to parental pressure because he is confused about his identity. How Indian is he after so many years abroad? His British education has drawn him away from his culture and cultivated an appreciation for all things Western. He also experiences self-loathing because of his racialized education. He agrees to marry Kamala, a woman who has a mind of her own despite her somewhat traditional upbringing. She is an activist and believes deeply in the Gandhian view of the world. Krishnan had had some exposure to the Indian anti-colonial movement in Britain, but had not really paid much attention to it. In meeting and marrying Kamala, Krishnan discovers an India that he has not known at all, a vision of a modern and independent India where men and women pursue democratic ideals. But he also reconnects with Cynthia, his British ex-lover, who has an Indian grandmother, but whose upbringing in England makes her fully British in her identity, with a degree of sympathy for India's fight for independence. It is through her that Krishnan had any understanding of the Indian nationalist movement, and Cynthia's presence in Delhi reignites their passion. At first, the novel seems like a domestic drama, but as the story evolves, it becomes clear that Rajan is exploring the idea of nationalism and debating who or what makes a person an Indian. Krishnan is a typical colonial product, a brown-skinned Englishman. He is the kind of bureaucrat dreamt up by the English Lord Macaulay in his Minute on Indian Education. In 1835, Thomas Babington Macaulay had called for English language education in India because he recognized that the British could not single-handedly rule the subcontinent without local help. He proposed the formation of a class who may be interpreters between us and the millions whom we govern, a class of persons, Indian in blood and color, but English in taste, in opinions, in morals, and in intellect. 100 years of such an educational policy had produced Macaulay's middlemen like Krishnan. Rajan, who himself had been the product of such an education, explores in the novel the psychic price paid by the men who were such colonial subjects. Early in the novel, soon after he meets Kamala, Krishnan attends a protest in Madras in which the non-violent action turns violent with police intervention. He gets arrested for his presence at the demonstration where he had tried to stop the aggression on another person. His family uses their influence to expunge his arrest record, and he joins the Indian Civil Service, a prized job among Brahmins of the time. Then he moves to Delhi with his new wife just as the conversation around partition is heating up and violence breaks out in both the Punjab and the Bengal side of the subcontinent. While Krishnan has respect and affection for his wife, Kamala, his desire for Cynthia triumphs and he abandons his wife when she's on a trip home for a family emergency. When Kamala returns, she's already aware of his infidelity and walks out of the marriage and begins volunteering at a refugee camp. Krishnan realizes that his love for her is deeper than his lust for Cynthia, and he goes off to find her. The bewildered British-educated Indian undergoes a baptism by blood and discovers his national identity. In a key scene in the novel, Krishnan, who is traveling to Shantipur to reconcile with his wife, encounters a Muslim man escaping bloodshed in the guise of a Hindu Brahmin. When Krishnan unwittingly uncovers the deception, the man attacks him with a knife to avoid discovery. At the same time, a Sikh man intervenes and kills the Muslim. That bathroom becomes a microcosm of the newly partitioned India and the irrational violence that decolonization engendered. Krishnan's romantic conflict between Kamala and Cynthia becomes symbolic of the struggle within him to determine if he would be an Anglophile or a Gandhian Indian. Would he be shaped by his British education and have an intellectual curiosity about India like Cynthia? Or would he embrace the ways of a new India where British-educated men like Nehru, Gandhi, and Jinnah were forging new nationalist philosophies that were in conflict with each other? Would Kamala's Gandhian worldview become his own? In Cynthia and Krishnan, we see the two-way flow of ideas and culture between imperial center and colony. It is Cynthia who introduces Krishnan in Britain to the Indian nationalist movement, and it is Kamala in India who introduces him to the high moral ground of the Gandhian movement. Krishnan is Cynthia's conduit for her continued Orientalist interests in India, to which she traces some of her ancestry. Through Cynthia, Rajan demonstrates that Britain too is irrevocably changed by the imperial experience. India is literally in the blood of the British. The violence of partition centered in both the Punjab and Bengal regions of India, but much of the literature focuses on experiences of the former. Scenes of violence on trains, the mutilation and murder of people, stories of abduction are often set in Punjab rather than in Bengal. Rajan's novel is no different. As India is erupting in the chaotic turmoil of partition, Krishnan joins Kamala at the refugee camp in Shantipur near the Punjab border. At the refugee camp, Krishnan works with Kamala and an overextended doctor to provide help to the refugees, and the novel becomes very detailed in its description of displacement, the communal violence in the camps and the surrounding areas, and the dangers of a cholera epidemic. The narrative ends tragically as Kamala dies in a violent encounter where she's trying to rescue a girl being abducted and sexually assaulted. In the scene where Kamala dies, we see how partition and its violence were literally occurring over women's bodies. As feminist historians like Urvashi Bhutalia, Ritu Menon, and Kamala Bhasin, among others, have noted, both colonial structures and the violence of partition were gendered, and women's bodies became the sites where religions, class, and caste disputes were played out. Rajan's novel is a partition narrative because of when it is set and how its final sections focus on the lived experiences of people during that time. However, the novel is much more than a testimony or a narrative of witnessing. It's also a narrative that explores what a nation means and how individuals have been shaped by the experience of imperialism. Through Krishnan, we understand the existential challenge of the middle-class Indian formed by Macaulay's policy, who is now emerging as the leader or bureaucrat for the new India. India itself is born of the amalgamation of a heterogeneous culture, Hindu, Muslim, Sikh, Christian, and a deep influence of British politics and culture. Britain, represented here by Cynthia, is also irrevocably transformed by empire as her family is both Indian and British. Balachandra Rajan, too, was a child of empire. Born in Burma, educated in England, civil servant in the newly independent India, and eventually an immigrant in Canada. He explored the cultural impact of the British Empire in his academic work, Under Western Eyes, India from Milton to Macaulay. He eventually spent many years at the University of Western Ontario in Canada when he retired and later died in 2009. Studies of partition in the last 75 years have evolved in many ways, from histories that uncover specific moments that have been overlooked to archiving of oral histories and feminist reappraisals of the history to unpack the lost experiences of the women who were traumatized. Many descendants of partition survivors have also sought to understand their family stories and to understand the multi-generational trauma resulting from it, what Ananya Jahanara Kabir has called partition's post-amnesia. Partition literary works in many languages captured the experiences of individuals and critiqued the politics of brutal violence, greed and power, religious bigotry, and entrenched nationalist ideologies that shaped those times and influenced the histories of three nations in the subcontinent for the last 75 years. Balachandra Rajan's neglected narrative offers just one perspective, that of a diasporic Indian of South Indian heritage, which is an important aspect of the story of empire and its aftermath in India.
This episode is part of Empire Line's Partition Season, marking the 75-year anniversary of the partition of British India in August 1947, which led to the formation of India and Pakistan. You can listen to the other episode with Dr. Sonal Kula. Just see the episode notes for links. Empire Lines is produced by Yelena Sofronievich. For more episodes, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.